Bring you greetings in Jesus' name again this morning, and I trust you have already been blessed this morning. I've been blessed. We talked this morning about living like the sons of God, and we could put in there living like the sons and daughters of God. And I was thinking that if we would get that part right, I probably wouldn't have anything more to say this morning. We talked about love, which laid a very good foundation for what I plan to share with you this morning. You can turn with me to Ephesians chapter 5. The title of the sermon this morning is Love at Home. And we talked the other evening about love being very important, love being even more important than faith. And I just want you to remind, I want you to remind you of that again this morning, that love is key. And the reason we need to talk about this is because if you're like me, which I think you probably are, we find that we find ourselves hurting the people that we love the most. We find ourselves hurting them because they're close to us. You know, other people in the church, we have no problem being nice and expressing our love and compassion when they're in need. And then when it comes right inside our doors to our husbands and our wives and our sons and our daughters, sometimes we have a little trouble there. I'd like to talk about that this morning. I know that there are many different phases represented here this morning, and I might lose some of you in some of these points. But I'd like to speak, first of all, to the husbands, and then to the wives, and then to the youth or the children. God has a purpose for you wherever you find yourself in life, whether you are married or whether you are single. God has a purpose for you, and that is to serve Him. I've been very passionate about our Christian homes and our marriages. They're very important to me. They are a wonderful blessing from God when they are done God's way. Love in general, and outside of the marriage even, is very important. 1 John 4, verse 7 says, "Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God." Love is important to God. There are many homes, many marriages that are not going well. And all of us know we've had those times when things have gotten a little rocky and there's things we had to work through. God intended, I think what God really intended for marriage to be is a little glimpse of heaven on earth. He never intended it to be a little bit of hell on earth. So we'd like to start by talking about God's love. And I have a little assignment for you this morning as we go through the first part. I'm going to read to you a number of scriptures. We're not going to turn to them. You're already at Ephesians 5, and we'll get there here soon. We're going to read a couple of those verses before we get to that text. But I'd like you to listen as I read these verses, and I would like you to tell me what you heard in those verses that we want to apply to this point this morning. We're taking a look at our perfect example, Jesus, and how he loved the church. Let me read a couple of verses to you. This one comes from Ephesians 5, verse 25, says, "Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it." Another verse from Galatians 1, verse 4, says, talking about Jesus, "who gave himself for our sins, that he might deliver us from this present evil world according to the will of God and our Father." Another verse from Galatians, this is in 2:20. "I am crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me, and the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith by the faith of the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. Another one yet from Ephesians 5, verse 2. It says, and walk in love, as Christ also hath loved us, and hath given himself for an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savor. Okay, so I read you four verses there. Is there anything that stood out to you in those verses? You found them in every one of the verses that is key to how we relate to each other this morning. Thank you. He gave himself. Jesus gave himself. What more can you give? As Jesus hung on the cross and bled and died, what more could he have given? He had given everything he had. I would like for us to remember that as we go through this sermon. My goal for us, for myself and for you, is to become more like Christ. You know, we can try and love. We can do all kinds of exercises to try and produce love in our hearts and in our homes and in our families. But you know what? Until we grasp this concept that I need to give of myself. No, I said that wrong. I said give of myself until I learn to give myself. Not just of myself. It's only then that we can love like Christ loved. How important is it to love? Well, 1 Peter 3, verse 7 says, likewise, ye husbands or wives, we could put both in there. Likewise, ye husbands or wives, dwell with them according to knowledge, give honor unto the wife or unto the weaker vessel as being heirs together of the grace of life, so that our prayers are not hindered. I believe, I take from that verse that if we can't get our love right at home, if we can't love each other, and that's broader than just the home, I believe, if we can't love each other, our spiritual life is affected by it. Okay, so we're here at Ephesians 5 now, and I think I'm going to read, starting at verse 21. Submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church. And he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause a man shall leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife even as himself, and the wife see that she reverence her husband. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and thy mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And we could read on there, we're not going to, but it talks about some other relationships as well. It's not our focus this morning. We want to look at the marriage, the home, the relationships there. So keep these verses in mind. We will bring these in as we go, some of them. But the husband's number one job this morning, the husband's number one job is to sacrificially love his wife, give himself. The wife's number one job is to unconditionally respect her husband. We'll talk about these later. But when this cycle goes full circle, there is loving, fulfilling relationships. His love produces her respect. Her respect produces his love, and it produces a cycle that we need. That's how God intended for marriage to be. All right, so we're going to move into the second point of the sermon, and that is understanding the heart of a woman. So I'm going to speak to this side. You know, we sometimes hear, and hopefully we're not saying them, but we sometimes hear a lot of jokes about the fact that you can't figure women out. I mean, they're just, well, you just can't figure them out. I think there's a reason God made women the way he made them. And that's because it takes a little bit of effort on our part to figure them out sometimes. We have to invest time and energy into them. Unconditional love. These are the things that, well, let me back up. I have a number of things here in this point that a woman wants from her husband, a wife wants from her husband. These things are important to a woman that she loves and appreciates. The first one is unconditional love. In your marriage vows, you promised to love and to cherish her no matter what. And it was easy to do that at that point. But then you fast forward 5, and sometimes it's even less. Sometimes it doesn't go very long at all until you find out this is more difficult than you thought. We promised to love and cherish no matter what. Even though those differences come up in our lives that we start to wonder if they're irreconcilable. Well, if Jesus is part of it, I don't think there are differences that are irreconcilable. But Jesus loves us unconditionally. In verse 25 of our text, it said, "Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it." I can't think of a higher example to point to than Jesus himself, who loved himself and gave everything he had for his beloved church. Am I willing to do that as a husband? And maybe you'd say, well, that doesn't apply to me. I'm not married. Well, store these things away. This may be helpful to you down the road if you are not married. Sacrificial love means that, well, unconditional love is sacrificial. And sacrificial love then means that we will sacrifice something to love. It will cost us something. Love is about giving, not taking. And a lot of these points, you know, are for both. So I hope you ladies are listening into this part of the sermon as well. It means sacrificial love means that we will have to, it will cost us something. Remember, we were talking about how Christ loved. He gave everything. He was willing to pay the price. And he did all this, let me remind you, even when we were unlovely. We were very unlovely. Sometimes you think, if only my wife would be more lovely, it wouldn't be so hard. Well, consider how you looked to God. Consider how I looked to God. I didn't bring anything to him. Love sacrificially, even when you don't feel like loving. A strong marriage requires two people who choose to love, even when they struggle to like each other. They choose to love. I said love will cost us something. Love will cost you something in your home. And I'm going to try and make it very practical this morning. I don't think I have it idealistic, but I do want to make it practical. Love will cost us something. Don't be ashamed, brethren, to offer to help your wife with the laundry. Yes, I have to do that sometimes. Not because she makes me do that, but because she's busy. She can use a hand. We can help with the laundry. Or the dishes, or the cleaning, or the children. After you get home from work in the evening, is it your time to do what you want to do? While she's busily still finishing up the chores of the day, her chores of the day, she's trying to take care of the children or whatever else beside. No, that costs us something. We step in. We help out with that. We give her, I said, it's going to cost us something to love sacrificially. So we help her in the home. There's also some things that I think are very special to her that she will love is when you can give her gift. You can buy her flowers. Does it begrudge you the few dollars? Actually, today it's not a few dollars anymore if you want to buy her flowers. It's pretty costly. But do you begrudge her that? About a month ago, I bought my wife a dozen roses, and I bought my daughter some as well. And I, 10 years ago, you could buy flowers for a whole lot less. But you know what? Am I thinking about the 60 or 70 or 80 bucks that I spent? Man, I could have used that somewhere else. Or am I going to use that to bless her? You know, $80 is a small price to pay. Of course, if we don't have the $80, we can't do that. And understand there's times when there is not $80 available to buy your wife a gift. Understand that. But it can be an $8 gift. Or it doesn't have to cost you anything, really. It can be an act of service. My point is, do you give that from your heart, or does it kind of grind you to do that? Love sacrificially. You know, we can tell our wife that we love her, but words are cheap. It's when we show that we love her that it really sinks in and resonates. You know, any amount of expensive gifts will never make up for a lack of love, true love in the marriage. So tell her you love her and then show her. She wants security. Your wife wants to know that she has security. We are to provide financially for our families, and I think we do really well at that. 1 Timothy 5:8 says, but if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. And I think we tend to put that to the financial side. So we're supposed to provide for them. We're supposed to provide financially. And like I said, I think we do well at that, but I think there's a lot more to it than that. I think what's more important is that we are providing spiritually for our wife and our family. We are leading out spiritually. We are being that spiritual umbrella of protection over our families. She wants security in that. She also wants to know that my loyalty is to her alone. That is important to her. She wants to know that. She wants to be able to trust me when I'm away from home, and she has a right to do that. She wants to know that she is the most important person in your world. She wants security. She wants to be able to trust you. Never criticize her in front of others. Yes, there are times when we do bring criticism, and hopefully if we do, it's constructive criticism we bring to our marriage relationship. But there's nothing that can undermine security like belittling your wife in front of other people, especially the children. Don't do that. Don't do that. I've been around people who have. Very demeaning. Rather, point out her gifts. Give her a little honor when there's others around. That goes a long way in bringing security to your wife. Point out her gifts. You really do well at this, or you really do well at that. Thank you for the way you work with the children. Thank you for keeping things together at home when I'm not here. Those are things your wife should hear from you. You know, if you treat her like a queen, she will very likely reciprocate by treating you like a king. Now, we don't treat our wife respect, or we don't treat our wife lovingly just for what we can get out of it. That's not what I'm trying to say. But that's the circle I was talking about earlier, the love and the respect. So she wants security. She wants to know she's valuable to her. She wants to know she's valuable to you. there's ways that we can show our wives that we are value, that they are valuable to us. And one of the ways that I know my wife appreciates, she wants to know that when she speaks to me, when she has something to say to me, that it's important enough that I can listen to her. And when I say listen, I don't mean that just, yes, you heard it. No, I'm saying listen as in give her your attention. Look at her. Put down, well, we used to say you should put down the newspaper. Now maybe we should say you should put down the cell phone or turn away from the computer screen and look at her. So am I really hearing what you are saying? Is this what you meant? Rather than she's talking and after a while she just stops because she doesn't even think you're listening anyways. And to be honest, sometimes we aren't. And she wants to know that she has our attention. And then when you listen to her, listen till she's finished. I don't know if it's just me or if this is a man problem, but I love to solve problems, okay? So your wife starts telling you about some problem she has in her day, and you know, before she's even halfway done, I've got a solution. Let's just get to the solution. I've got things to do. See, there's a problem with that approach, isn't there? You know, sometimes she's not even looking for a solution. She's just looking to have a communication with me. So forget about efficiency when you're talking with your wife. Just hear what she has to say without trying to fix it before she's even done telling you what she has started to say. Value her by listening to her. Value her by accepting her input into your life, into your decisions. You know, men do not have a monopoly on good ideas. I found that out. Sometimes your wife, I think that God has given, I can't find this anywhere in the Bible, but I think God has given women an intuition that men don't have. The way they could just, I don't know, sometimes see into, I don't know, they have input that we do well to pay attention to and listen to. So listen to her, value her, seek her counsel. And sometimes she makes mistakes. How do you relate? How do you respond to that? Do you laugh about them together or do you cry? Does it upset you? Does it bring friction? My wife does some book work at our place of business. And so some on those days, she's really busy. I mean, she's got to take care of the stuff at home. And then she comes into the office and does some work there. And so sometimes supper that evening can be a little hurried. You know, she doesn't have a lot of time to prepare it. So we had one of those days a while back, and I asked her if I could share this, so it's okay. But she rushed off from the office to go home and quickly make supper. And I came home a while later, and she had, I don't know if you all do this, but sometimes we eat breakfast for supper. So that's what we were having that day. And she had made creamed eggs and toast. I love creamed eggs and toast. So I come in the door, and she said, well, things weren't going well. The creamed eggs had just scorched, and they were still edible. We ate them. So, you know, when a lady has just made a supper, she likes when it's just right and good, and she likes to, even when you give her a compliment on it. So after we had finished the scorched eggs and toast, she had some dessert there that we were going to eat. And of course, I'm a little impatient sometimes. I got stuff to do after supper's over. And so she had this pumpkin pie. And this is one that she had picked up at, like a frozen pumpkin pie. She picked up at the Benton Dent store, I think. And so this thing was only partially thawed. Well, like, I'm going to eat it anyway. So I cut myself a slice of pumpkin pie, put it on my plate, put some Cool Whip on top of it. And I'm ready to enjoy my piece of pumpkin pie. I took a bite of it. And something was wrong with the pumpkin pie. And so I said something about it. This pie, there's pie's got issues. Well, here we got to looking at the box. Here it had never been baked. It was simply frozen. It was still frozen enough. It was hanging together there. It looked like a great piece of pie. you know, what do you do with those things? So here's your wife. She's really wishing that she could hear something like, this is a great supper, which she knew that wasn't coming. What do we do with that? You know, we can laugh about that or we can cry. We should laugh about it. You know what? She'll do a lot better the next time. She could point to a lot of times when you have tried to do something and you have messed up pretty badly. The pumpkin pie didn't matter much. Some of the things we do have a lot longer lasting consequences. All right, so she wants unconditional love. She wants security. She wants a value. She wants to know she's beautiful. Did you know that? She wants to know she's beautiful. So let her know that. Let her know that. And fathers to daughters, may I throw this in here as well? Let your daughters know their value. If you don't, someone else will. And I think that's something we get a little, I don't know, we shy away from. Maybe it's our culture. I'm not sure. Let your wife and your daughters know they are beautiful. They're valuable to you. Affirm them. And sometimes that's tough. You know, maybe your wife just bought a piece of dress fabric that you really don't like. She brings that home and she shows it to you and she's got it laying there on the counter and you're just thinking, I hope she doesn't ask me if I like that. And sure enough, she does. She makes this thing all up. She puts on this dress and she says, so how do you like it? What do you say? You can't say it's the greatest dress I've ever seen because you don't like it. Well, I remember what an elderly brother once said. We were, I believe, at a marriage enrichment seminar over at Penn Valley. Maybe some of you were there, but he had a problem kind of like that with the dress. And his response, never forget it, he said his wife come to him and said, hey, honey, do you like my dress? And he didn't. He said, honey, you make that dress look great. So maybe that's a way out of your predicament when you find yourself in that situation. But they want to know they're beautiful. They really do. There's a lot of pressure on in the world today. There's a lot of pressure to be beautiful. You know, the world judges beauty by waist size or the amount of makeup you have on or the way your hair is styled or whatever. There's a lot of pressure to fit in. The world's sense of beauty is very sensual and very physical. Is that what it takes for our wife to be beautiful to us? The average woman today, I understand, spends about $15,000 on beauty products in her lifetime. Why? Because they want to be beautiful. They want you as their husband, and sometimes, unfortunately, it's not their husband they're trying to impress. They want you to see their beauty. It is not the outward, it's the inward. 1 Peter 3, there's some verses there we could turn to. We don't have time this morning. I'm going to go over time, I'm afraid. But a meek and a quiet spirit is what is attractive to God, and that is what is attractive, should be attractive to us. Yes, there's something about outward beauty that appeals to us, but sometime the outward beauty will fade. Just remember that, young men, that beautiful young lady that you marry, or you are courting, or you hope to marry someday, will someday be old and wrinkly. Are you still going to love her? And the same goes, you know, the other way. True outward beauty springs from deep within the soul. It's that meek and quiet spirit. The last one I have on this section is a time to reconnect. This is another way of showing her that you value her. And again, we probably all come out at different places on this. But I am recommending a time to reconnect. We have done that over the years. Sometimes we've been criticized for that. And maybe you feel the same way. We've sometimes heard, we didn't do this a lot, I don't think, but Sometimes my wife and I would go away, let the children at home. And sometimes we drew criticism for that. You should be at home with your family. And our family is valuable. But there's also a time to reconnect. Take time for each other. Remember how it was when you were dating? Remember how easy it was to just do nice things for her. You probably even opened her door when she got into your car. And I'm not saying that you have to keep on doing that. But what does fascinate me is how, when you are young and you're courting this young lady that is perfectly able, perfectly self-sufficient to do all the things that you try and do for her, you still do that because you love her. You fast forward 5 or 10 years down the road, and now she's towing a little child behind her. She's got a child in her arm. She's got her purse or whatever. Her hands are full. And now she can get in the car herself. You go over and jump in your side. She can fend for herself. What happened? What changed there? Does she still know that you value her the way that you did when she was your girlfriend? So to you husbands, I recommend once in a while having that date night. Call the grandparents if they're around here. You know, I'm a grandpa now, and you know what? It does not bother me at all if our children call up and say, "Would you keep the grandchildren tonight so we can go do something?" You know, that's we love that. We love that. Okay, so let's shift our focus a little bit to understanding the heart of a man. And these are some things that are important to a man. Number one is unconditional respect. Your husband wants unconditional respect. Is that too hard? Is that too lofty? Unconditional, that's a word that's tough to get around. That means anything he does, you're still going to respect him. Well, 1 Peter 3, verse 6 says, "Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well and are not afraid of any amazement." Lord is a term that you probably haven't used much, and I don't require my wife to call me that. And I doubt whether Abraham required his wife to call him that. But the point is, there was a respect there. There was a respect for that husband, for Abraham. How do you respect him? Give him an opportunity to lead, even if he makes mistakes, because he will. He has a lot of responsibility on his shoulders, and sometimes it's very heavy. And sometimes its focus is not where it should be because of his responsibilities. Let him lead and respect him as he does that. Give him the opportunity to do that. Even when you see him making poor decisions, because you will. He will make some bad ones. What do? Well, sometimes there is a place, there will be a place for you to share your opinions, your advice. You know, this is how I see it. I'm a little bit concerned about the way this is going. It is okay, I believe, to share that. Share it and then let it go. Let him do what he needs to do with that decision. To keep harping about that and nagging will not show respect. And when he does, not if he does, but when he does make a wrong decision, don't say, "I told you that's exactly what happened, would happen." Don't say that. Because, you know, we as men, we know when we make a bad decision most times, and we know exactly what you said. And we're thinking about that. You don't have to come and remind us most times because we're wishing at that point we would have listened to your advice. Don't say, "I told you that's how it would be." Show loyalty even when his mistakes are made. Support him and affirm him. He is the man. He is the authority in your home. 1 Timothy 2:12 says, "But I suffer not a woman to teach, nor to usurp authority over the man, but to be in silence." Submit to authority, not because he's so much better than you are, but because that's God's plan. Somebody has to do the. Somebody has to be the driver's seat. I grew up as a in an old order setting, and so I well remember, even after my parents moved out of that setting, my grandmother was still in that setting, and me and my older brother, we would sometimes drive my grandmother in her horse and carriage to the grocery store. Of course, that was we thought that was great. So there's two reins. I don't. I assume you are very familiar with how people drive horses, but there's two reins coming back from the bridle. And so if me and my brother was sitting in that carriage and I said, you know what, I'm going to take the one rein and you take the other one, and we're going to go to the store. How do you think that would work? So I'm tugging on my rein and I'm trying to pull the horse's head to the right because I want to turn in here. My brother says, no, I don't want to do that. He's pulling on his rein and the horse is supposed to turn over that direction. Do you get the picture? You know, somebody has to be in the driver's seat. Somebody has to have both reins so that the horse and carriage can get to where you want to go. It is not because I am better at tugging on my rein or my brother is better at tugging on his. It's about one person having the reins and guiding that horse and carriage where it should go. Someone has to steer. Someone has to drive. Now, the husband has to act responsibly with that authority that God has given to him and with reason. Well, our text, verse 22 in Ephesians 5 says, wives, submit. You know, us men can't quite identify that because we've never been wives. We don't know what it is like to submit to a husband, but we know what it's like to submit to God. The husband isn't at the top of, we're not at the top of the pole, at the top of the pile. Think about that when you're asking something of your wife, asking her to submit. Think about how it is for us to submit. Well, Colossians 3:18 says it this way, wives, submit yourselves unto your husbands as it is fit or proper in the Lord. One young wife said, I really do want my husband to be the leader in our home. I just want to make sure that he makes decisions that match what I want. See, that's not the kind of reverence and respect that God is asking for. A wife can submit without respecting, but I don't think a wife can respect without submitting. Can submit without respecting, but can't respect without submitting. So the husband also needs affirmation. Just like we were talking about for the wife, the husband needs affirmation. Affirm him in his leadership. Encourage that. Sometimes men struggle to take their place as a leader of the home. They're just, sometimes you have a family where the husband is just not a natural leader and the wife is. That can maybe complicate things sometimes because the wife is maybe even better at it than the husband. Affirm him. Let him lead. Encourage him. He needs to know that you believe in him. He needs to hear you affirm him publicly, just like you like to hear him affirm you publicly. Bless him after a hard day's work. Thank him for all he does for you and your family and your home. Look for his good points, and we do have some. You know, all of us have some. Sometimes we have to look harder than others, but we all have good points that you can find. And then if you must criticize, do it constructively. Affirm him when there's discipline needed in the home. Sometimes that's a flashpoint in marriages, where we were brought up in different environments, different homes, and then we mesh our ideas, especially this thing of child discipline. Sometimes it's a flashpoint. Support each other. Affirm him when discipline is needed. And then, maybe coming back to this side for just a moment, take your place in that. I don't think it is the wife's place to raise the children by themselves. Take your place in that. So affirm him. Another one is that we need to support him, kind of maybe the same as affirming. But support him in the work that he has to do, in at home, at church. Behind every successful man, there is a supportive woman. I believe that. I'm without a supportive wife like I have, I would be in trouble. Behind every successful man is a supportive wife. You know, maybe your husband comes home from business meeting. He's just been elected to another office, and he's already got more than you think he can handle. But he said yes again. What do you do with that? Can you support him? You know, it's hard enough. It's hard enough for a man who has a lot on his plate, especially when it comes to church work and school work and other things that he can become involved in. You know, there's some days we want to come home and just, after supper, we want to kick off our shoes and relax. We don't want to head off to another meeting or whatever it is. And then it makes it even harder when the wife is sullen because dad's going to be away again tonight. And I've been putting up with these children all day already, and it's just been a bad day, and here he goes again. Does he know that when he leaves the house? Or does he feel like he has a supportive wife? Now, there are some times when we as men try and go beyond our limits. And there are times when wives need to step in and say, you know what? Dear husband, I think you've overcommitted. There again, it's okay to say that, but then let him decide what to do about it. Lovingly appeal to him, but then support him. Support him, and this goes both ways. Again, a lot of these go both ways, but support him when he does make a call in family life. Maybe it's something the children, maybe something the youth want to do. And it seems to me like moms are always more lenient than dads. When dad has said, no, we are not going to do that. You cannot do that. The children should not be able to come to mom and get permission to do what dad has said no. We were very close to a family growing up as I was a youth where that happened regularly. If the children wanted to do something and dad said no, they would go to mom and mom would say, well, I guess just this time. Well, this happened frequently. Today, that family is fractured, splintered. Many of those children are not in the church. And I wonder why. I wonder if it went back to the fact that mom and dad were not together on raising their family. Today, that couple is old, probably wringing their hands, wondering what went wrong. Support each other in raising the children. Well, communicate. Communication is a big thing. I talked about communication from this side over. You need to communicate to your husband as well. Sometimes we as husbands aren't too observant. We're not tuned in like we should be. And wives sometimes need to help us out when we do miss something. Don't expect him to know what you're thinking all the time. If you don't communicate it, he can't read your mind. What's a husband supposed to think if he comes home from work and the instant he steps inside the door, he knows he can sense there's something wrong. His wife is not herself. Maybe she's in tears. And he says, well, honey, what's wrong? And the wife says, nothing. What's he supposed to think? You know, we can't read your minds. We are looking for you. When we ask that question, we are looking for you to tell us this went wrong or that went wrong. Or maybe you don't even know. Maybe you don't even know why you're upset. And I've already asked my wife, what's wrong? I don't know. It's just maybe it's a combination of things that are just overwhelming. But whatever it is, tell him. Don't say there's nothing wrong, because he's not going to know what to do with that. again, for both sides of the house, sometimes we tend, when things get a little stressed and a little strained, we start to do this thing we call the silent treatment. Do you know what I'm, you don't have to answer me if you know what I'm talking about or not. Probably you don't. But we quit communicating. We quit talking to each other. How has that ever solved any issues? I always thought communication is what solves issues. So we cut off that thing that will help us to be reconciled. You know, if we could see it from, well, let me read a story to you here. This goes for the husband and the wife, but it just kind of brings out the folly of this silent treatment. A married couple once had a quarrel. They ended up giving each other the silent treatment. So 2 days in, the husband had a problem. He needed to catch a flight for his business trip the next morning, but they weren't communicating. And he knew he has problems with oversleeping. But he was not going to be the first one to break the silence. So he writes his wife a note and says, I need to be at the airport by 5 a.m., I believe it was, to catch the plane. Make sure I don't oversleep. Maybe you've heard this story before. But he was concerned about being in Chicago for that business meeting. The next morning, the man woke up, and it was 9 a.m. Remember, he had to catch his flight at 5 a.m. His flight had long since departed. He was about to find his wife and demand an answer from her for her failings when he noticed a note by the bed. It read, it's 5 a.m. Wake up. You know, when we read a story like that, we can see that that's pretty stupid. Why can't we see that when we are in that and we are struggling to communicate? Remember that story. I don't know if it's true or not. Probably not. You know what? Our issues are only going to be resolved as we communicate. Talk things out. And as you do that, avoid emotionally charged words like you always do this or you never do that. You always have the last word, whatever it is that you put in there. Avoid those words. All right, well, it's time to wrap this up. I'm going to have a couple of points yet for the youth, the children. Those verses we read in Ephesians 6 about obedience, honor, that seems to me like it's really important to Paul and really important to God. And remember, our theme is love at home. And youth, children, you have a tremendous role to play as well in how things function smoothly at home. You are to obey. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and thy mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest live long on the earth. He says, just do this because it's right. It's good. There are blessings associated with this. Honor and respect. Colossians 3:20 says, children, obey your parents in all things. That is tough for youth sometimes. I know it is, because I was a youth one time too. In all things, there really are no areas that are exempt. We are to obey. That's what we're called to do. Of course, there are areas exempt if they go against what God has required in His Word. If they go against Bible principles, then you don't have to respect or honor. Well, you still have to honor, but you don't have to obey. Proverbs 23, verse 22 says, hearken unto thy father that begat thee, and despise not thy mother when she is old. You know, sometimes children, youth especially, get to the place where they feel like they're too old to respect mom and dad. Besides, mom and dad are way out of touch with 21st century living. And the things they require are, no one else has to do that. They rebel. They get frustrated. Let me remind you, youth and children, that your parents have many more years of experience than you do. And sometimes what you see as random expectations that they have and place on your life, simply things they have learned, they have learned lessons the hard way in life that they don't want you to have to repeat. Yes, I know there are parents that are unreasonable. I've probably been one of those at times. But can you respect them? Parents have your best in mind as they make house rules. We have rules at our house. Our children are, our youngest one is now 16, and we still have rules that they have to follow. Your respect and your honor will contribute significantly to the harmony of your home life. Be a good example to your younger siblings. I just want to remind you yet that rebellion is a big deal. And when I say rebellion, that's a pretty strong word. But, you know, if we aren't going to listen to mom and dad, that's really what it is. We rebel against them. And I'd like to read some verses to you from the Old Testament. You don't have to turn there. I got them printed out here. It's from Deuteronomy 21, verses 18 to 21. It says, if a man have a stubborn and rebellious son, which will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and that when they have chastened him, will not hearken unto them, then shall his father and mother lay hold on him and bring him out unto the elders of his city and unto the gate of his place. And they shall say unto the elders of his city, this our son, or probably daughters, I'm not sure how it related to daughters, but this our son is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard, and all the men of the city shall stone him with stones that he die. So shall thou put away evil from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear. Now, did you ever hear of anything so unreasonable as that? Well, we don't do that anymore, do we? But I believe the reason God had such a harsh punishment for that is because he wanted to send a message to us. We still read that today and understand from that clearly that God doesn't like rebellion. Your parents won't take you to the city gate and have you stoned if you rebel against them, but you will still answer to God. Parents have a part to play in this as well. That verse we read there in Ephesians 6, verse 4, and ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And mothers can do this as well. Fathers, relate to your children the way God relates to you, the way you would want to be related to. You know, sometimes we bring baggage with us from the past, and we relate to our children in the ways that our parents related to us. When I got married, I said, and some of you can probably identify with this, but I love my parents. They were great, but they had some flat spots just like you and I do. And there's some of those things that I said, I would never do that. You know what I saw mom and dad doing? I'll never do that. You know what some of the first things are that come around, that come to our attention that I am a chip off the old block, is that I am doing the things dad did. And I've had to be very intentional with some of those things to try and break that cycle. And it can be very tough because that is our reference point. Well, I need to close this. Even Jesus respected his parents, youth and children. Jesus respected his parents. Luke 2:51 says, and he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was subject unto them. He did what he was told to by his parents. Even Jesus did that. Well, we tend to hurt those closest to us in our closest relationships. And I hope and I pray this morning that these few thoughts and hopefully the practical illustrations will help us to apply, or I hope we can apply them to our lives and the spiritual principles that are there in love the way Jesus loved us, so that we can experience a little bit of heaven on earth in our marriages. God bless you. Let's kneel for prayer.